5 on Radio 3 and catch your wave. Good afternoon. It's nearly 12:15 on the line from Melbourne. Business futurist Morris Misolowski. Good afternoon, Morris. How are you?
I'm excellent. Good afternoon to you.
Lovely to talk to you. Well, we've got to talk a little bit about what's been going on in Las Vegas. But first up, obviously, about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, little trickles. David Bowie's dead. Am I right? Am I wrong? And then immediately somebody says, no, it's a wind-up, da-da-da-da-da. It brings up a very interesting point, this. We can't really believe Facebook as much as they would have us think.
Well, we're not quite certain about it, are we? I mean, especially,
no, we're not.
Especially of my generation. I hate saying that. You know, kids that have been brought up in the digital space believe that they have no issue with it. It is what it is. But you and I still have some difficulty believing it until we see it in some kind of above-line media format. You know, we need to hear it from something more credible.
I was talking to Jared this morning. He's a top Aussie newsman. He was saying immediately that everybody's staring at each other around the newsroom going, is it, isn't it, is it? Because we can't put pen to paper unless we know this is absolutely kosher. And, of course, then they're saying, oh, wait for the BBC. You guys would say, wait for the ABC. And then you've got more of a clue.
Yeah, I mean, here it happened around 6 o'clock, so it broke into the evening news, so there's a lot more credibility about it. But you're right, there was a lot of questioning. It was also the fact that they were able to keep this secret for so long. I think it came out of the blue for most people.
That's the big thing for you, is it, in this day and age, keeping anything secret in the world of social media and
showbiz? Yeah, I've been reflecting on that. I mean, I've been reflecting on Bowie too, of course, because he is like most people, the music scape that I grew up with. I was under 10 when I started listening to him, and some of the songs for me are the things I still hear in my head all the time. But it was the fact that it came out of the blue for me. There was absolutely no conversation around it before. He'd been sick, what, about 5 or 6 years ago, had a heart attack, and had been coming in and out of the limelight ever since, but nobody thought it was going to happen. And I think that in a lot of instances, not so much that we didn't believe social media, it's that we didn't believe it had happened.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, also, like I said earlier on today, it's when something that was certainly a part of people's upbringing disappears. You know, I'm wondering what people of this sort of age now will say in X years' time, because, you know, things have really changed.
Well, they have, and if you look at the authenticity of Twitter or Facebook or any of the others, you talk about the Queen now makes most announcements through it. The royal births over the last couple of years have all come through Twitter. Even the Pope uses Twitter now. Our prime ministers, a lot of the comments that are coming out of China, a lot of that comes out of social media now. It is their first point of call because it's the most immediate way to get to people. There's no intermediary. So it has certainly gotten to the top echelons, and they are using it as a communication tool. I think for most of us, we just need to understand that it is, just to use your term, just as kosher as the other media. But the difficulty is, I think it comes back also to...
What's coming out, Morris, is that Twitter seems to be the big player on this real dissemination of big-time information.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And for me, the other fascinating point is that Twitter's become the tool of preference for CEOs and financial companies. So you find a lot of people that play at that top end of the town are using Twitter. And they're also using it as a listening tool. It's quite fascinating in this whole new genre of conversations where and when they're being had. And news like the one we've had overnight is never good from any source.
The thing is, we still don't know at the end of the day if what we're reading from David Cameron is written by David Cameron. In his case, it probably is, but we don't know that. Have we become more trusting of things that we're told?
I don't actually think we have. I think we've become less trusting. We've become more discerning. So we certainly read a whole lot more rubbish than we ever read before. I think what we're getting better at is filtering it and looking for who the source is and what their credibility might be, even fleetingly. If it's somebody that we read a lot and we know a lot, we trust, and if it's not somebody that we do, we don't. The other thing I love about the online space is that you get quite an immediate rebuff. So if what you're saying is not true, you often get slammed very, very quickly, and the community finds out it's not true. Whereas in a newspaper or some other source, it can take a while for that to become known.
It's very often sweeping statements. You certainly, I keep saying Facebook, because as I said, that's the biggest platform here in Hong Kong. And you can write more on there, obviously. But sweeping statements, people are going to say, yeah, that's what happened. And then you're going to read another thing on Facebook that says that was a load of rubbish. I don't know if people hoax always on purpose. Perhaps they just need to do more homework, I don't know.
Well, I think they need to do more homework. But what we're seeing is, of course, that many people have a voice now, whereas before only one or two had. And if we want to get philosophical, you know, that Saturday night over a glass of wine, what made the credibility of the news any better than what we're seeing now? It's still, even with the best of intention, with the best, you know, with the best research and everything else out there, it's still always the biased view of the world.
Do you reckon this makes the news guys' jobs harder these days? Because they're going to be seeing a lot of things that, for whatever reason, they'd like to think is true, whether it's good or bad news, but they still can't do it.
I think it's making it increasingly more difficult than it was before. There was time before, as you said, to gather news, to gather sources, to be able to check, to be able to come back to it, to write it, to craft it. But nowadays, all of it often has to be done in a split second. Even if it's not your preferred method, you know the marketplace is going to move on. The story will move on quite quickly, so you've got to jump into the fray. So their skill sets are very different. Most journalists now, if they're using social media, are also speaking a different language. There's social media language, and you've got to understand how to get a story across very quickly in that space.
Well, also, you're wanting to fish for comments as well, so you've got to put it in a language that's desirable for people. They may just help your story.
And you've got to be able to bait it. You've got to be able to put it out into the space where those people will read it, find your hashtags and do all the other things as well. It's a very, very different, it's a very different medium. The journalists I speak to, and like you, I speak to many of them, it's really about immediacy now. It's about immediate distribution as well, going to the end user. It's a very different space. Whereas before, we might have sent a team out somewhere to look at something, and we can now send an individual reporter out with literally with their mobile phone to anywhere on the planet. And she or he can report back even in video format, in HD video format, from the front line of anywhere.
It's just a bit ironic or something that, you know, yesterday, as I say, the first little trickles of news, and then of course 10 minutes later it went bang, the whole thing, you know, they're talking about breaking the internet, but the first little trickles of information about David Bowie dying, then people said it's a hoax. It's funny that first reaction these days to something huge like that.
Yeah, for some people, I mean, let's chart it again, see if in 10 years it still seems the same way.
Yeah, well, what do you reckon? I mean,
I think it'll just be ordinary. I think we will have accepted it by then. Remembering that 10 years from now is very different as well. We'll have artificial intelligence. There'll be a whole lot of things that'll filter that sort of information for us.
Yeah, we were saying just now that we think for the big stuff, Twitter seems to be where it's at. If they extend the amount of characters you can write, would that lose its cachet?
Well,
because you're forced to essentially write a headline.
We're about to find out, because one of the rumours over the last couple of weeks is that they are going to do exactly that. They're going to expand it out to over 1,000 characters.
See, I'm wondering if that's going to be their, not downfall, but I'm wondering if that's not a good direction.
I'm not sure either. I think they need to go beyond 140. There was never any really good reason for 140 characters, except for a marketing ploy. The code...
It's a headline, Morris. That's what I'm on about. It's like, if you write it properly, bang, message delivered.
But isn't that a new format? That's what I find fascinating. It's something that I do often with groups when I'm talking about communication skills. I get them to write a story for Facebook, for Twitter, and for a blog, and for a newspaper. And it's very different writing. I mean, you've got, as you've said, a very different amount of words, different audiences, different languages.
It's old-fashioned newspaper headline writing. I mean, a lot of these guys, they pride themselves on doing funny, witty, powerful headlines that just hit you between the eyes.
It is, but it's a totally new skill set. So I think we'll actually see the answer to your question within the next 12 months. In some ways we lament it, in some ways, you know, it might be the falling away of something, but Twitter's less than a decade old. We haven't had it around for that long.
Do you know, this thing about whether something's a wind-up or is inaccurate or is a hoax or whatever, when you read it on Facebook, is this a good old-fashioned case of caveat emptor?
I think it always is, and I think we need to be wary about anything we read regardless of its source. One of the things we should always do is to be checking it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, some other stuff that's been going on this week, and I've caught clips on the TV morning news about this, is the Consumer Electronics Show. It's gadget boy time, really, in Vegas, isn't it?
Well, it's Nerdvana. Nerdvana. So every year around the first week of January, all of the geeks and nerds migrate to Las Vegas. There's about 170,000 odd people that go. It's 2.2 million square foot of display. It literally, you cannot get a hotel room in Las Vegas over those 3 days. 3,500 exhibitors. And it's a space where many of the new toys have been shown for the first time. First time we saw the VHS, first time we saw the microwave. First time for many electronics over the last 30 years had their showing at CES. And the show, as you said, was on last week, finished last Friday. And there were some interesting products, but more interestingly, some interesting trends came out of CES.
Well, one of the headlines that's crept out over the past couple of days is that Apple's making a rival car to Tesla. I wonder if that was dangled over there.
It was. Look, I'm not sure that's absolutely true. The headline is, and it's been talked about for the last couple of months.
There you go. We saw it on social media.
The rumor, absolutely, so we must believe it. The reality of that headline actually comes from something quite more benign. What's happening is that Apple, like Google and the others, are definitely working towards a car. There was a very strong rumor that Apple and Ford were going to hook up at CES, and that didn't happen. The rumor you're talking about actually falls out because one of the new extensions, the internet ones, is .cars. And that has a grandfathering clause that finished last week, meaning that if you are a car manufacturer, you had up until last Friday to get your domain name before it went to the public.
Okay.
And what happened was that many of the car manufacturers waited until the very last minute to take out their domain name. And the story that you read came from that notion that what they registered was apple.cars.
There's been drama behind the scenes there as well, because I'm reading a story here about U.S. officials busting a Chinese hoverboard company at CES. Do you know about that one?
Not at the hoverboard, no, not at the CES, but we've had a lot of drama in Australia, and I assume in Hong Kong and elsewhere as well on hoverboards. They're talking about banning them.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about this one. This one was basically, they said the Chinese guys nicked their patent idea of patent infringement claim, so the marshals turned up at the CES with their, you know, guns and badges and lifted them. So this is more industry infighting.
What can one say to that? How unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. So the big thing that was being talked about before was Apple gagging for this proximity battery charger.
Yes, so again, it's one of those things that we have to wait and see if it will or it won't come out.
Apple's had a... It's necessary, Morris, you reckon? Just because the other guys have got it.
Look, it probably isn't necessary. I'm sure Apple is having a crack at it. What I'm imagining is that within the next year or so, they will try and find a way to jump over it. They'll try and find a way to better it, which seems what Apple does. They're not always first to market. In fact, lately they've been very reticent to be first to market or even second to market on these products.
Sometimes it's not a bad idea to do that, surely.
Well, it isn't. What Apple sometimes does, and we wait for Apple, I waited for Apple for about 4 years for them to get into banking, because with NFC, near field communication, about 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of us believed that they would get into banking using their mobile phone as a credit card, so just having that instead of the plastic. And they were very, very slow to get to that. In fact, last year was about the first year they've made any real headway into it. So, look, Apple is Apple. They have their own ecosystem. They walk at their own pace.
I think this is irking them, though, big time, this one. I mean, their whole issue of battery power must be really getting up their nose.
It does, but we've got to find a much better way around it. I mean, what is it? What will this mythical battery of tomorrow be? I've seen them talk about wind. I've seen them talk about water, literally, for small batteries. There will be a technology. I don't believe it will be an issue in 5 years. I think it will disappear that quickly because every manufacturer on the planet is trying to resolve this, and whoever can has got a lazy $1 billion just waiting for them and beyond.
Well, as we mentioned before, I mean, the amount of applications now and functions and uses is fit to bursting, and of course, that needs battery life.
Yeah, and we're going to get worse, because what we're doing now is we're not using our phone for storage anymore, we're actually using it to draw down. A lot of the information is kept in clouds now for our streaming, for our calendars, for everything else. So the device is constantly on, constantly churning and whirring behind the scenes, using up more power than ever before.
I think sometimes if a lot of the telephone companies were smart, they might big up just going on good old data at the times instead of always having to have Wi-Fi. I mean, if they made that considerably cheaper, they might win.
Yeah, but unfortunately, they've always been in the short-term game. I mean, I agree with you, but they've always been in the short-term game of trying to gouge people with really exorbitant prices.
Have you noticed that if your battery's going down or whatever, you switch off the Wi-Fi? I mean, depending on what your plan is, it can be pretty reasonable just to do your bits and pieces minus Wi-Fi.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I will often use mine off Wi-Fi, as you've said. I mean, I've got a pretty good package on mine. And, Wi-Fi be blown.
Yeah. Nearly out of time today, but did anything really grab you from this?
Well, there's a couple of... Look, we've talked about a lot of these over the past year. Cars were... Virtual reality was another big one. Drones was one that came up, and there was one, I don't know whether you caught it, that comes out of your end of the wood, a drone called Ehang, which is a passenger drone.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
So that's a one-person drone. It literally is a bubble that fits over the size of a person. The person is up to 100 kilos. It costs a lazy $250,000, so I'm sure you'll go out and get one for me this afternoon.
Yep.
It flies for 23 minutes, And it is one of these things that is a wonderful fantasy, but I doubt we'll ever see in the marketplace in any reality.
This is amazing, Maurice. This is weird. It's like turn back the clock exactly 100 years. Around this time in the early 20th century, flight, you know, was the topic du jour.
And it's becoming so again. Look, the reason we won't see it is simply because at this stage, none of the regulators are going to let it fly. I mean, literally let it fly in the air. And it'll take us quite a while for that to race through. But I thought that was an interesting thing also. And one of the things that affected Hong Kong, as with 180 other countries over the past week, again out of CES, was the streaming of videos becoming a big thing. And Netflix announced 170 new countries, including Hong Kong.
Well, that's been a big topic here. I would like to crack into that with you next week, if we may, but we're out of time right now.
Look forward.
Maurice Misolowski, as always, thanks very much for your time on the